Hello and welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Christina Borgeson here with Celia Farber. We have a super special show for you today. Our guest in the whistleblower world, his name is Bill Binney, is one rare angel having emerged from the secretive reptilian world of government intelligence. After serving 30 years at the National Security Agency, Binney's sin was to so perfectly balance his genius for improving intelligence gathering as a technical director with such an extraordinarily high regard and respect for the public's pocketbook and privacy that he became institutionally intolerable and was unceremoniously booted out. Now he is a member of and cyber investigator for Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, or VIPS for short, an organization of dark arts angels, if ever there was one. Binney and his fellow VIPS cyber investigators became a part of the Russiagate story when they examined data from the July 5th, 2016 Guccifer 2.0 intrusion into the DNC's server and concluded that, quote, DNC data was copied onto a storage device at a speed that far exceeds an internet capability for a remote hack, close quote, thus blowing up the official narrative claiming Russian hackers broke into the server. Binney and his cyber colleagues also concluded that the same inside DNC copy/leak process was used at two different times by two different entities for two distinctly different purposes. One, an inside leak to WikiLeaks before Julian Assange announced on June 12, 2016 that he had the DNC documents and planned to publish them. And two, a separate leak on July 5, 2016 to preemptively taint anything WikiLeaks might later publish by, quote, showing it came from a Russian hack. We're going to talk to Binney about the latest on Russiagate, but first, I want to welcome you, Bill, to our show.
Well, thank you.
And secondly, I think what we'd like to do is get your thoughts as a government whistleblower yourself on this current whistleblower who came forward. You know, the basis of the information he provided and the government process that is ensuing after that. Could you give us your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. To call him a whistleblower really diminishes the value of true whistleblowers. This guy's what I would call a rumor blower. All he's doing is blowing rumors around.
That's great.
Whistleblowers come forward with firsthand knowledge of real problems, and they blow the whistle on those real problems. This guy came forward with hearsay, you know, from the media and from people talking, I guess. We don't know because he doesn't know either because he has no firsthand knowledge. So this is basically inadmissible in a court of law. It's just rumorant.
That's brilliant, rumor blower.
You shouldn't diminish the true value of whistleblowers by calling him one because he's not. I mean, that's the way I look at it very simply. For the DNI to accept a bunch of rumors as something in a whistleblower complaint, he should have referred, and I guess he did, referred to the FBI for verification and validation because at that point there's nothing real in what that man was saying or that person was saying in their complaint.
Now, would the NSA have any information on this at all?
Well, they would have the true voice. They would have the voice transcript, the recordings.
Okay, so they could contribute to this investigation by giving the word-for-word transcript, right? I mean, did you see the transcript that was made public? Is that an incomplete transcript, do you know, Bill?
No, it looks pretty complete to me, but, you know, I would say if they wanted to check it, NSA has the true recording of the conversation. So, you know, they should be able to If there's any question at all, NSA would have the bottom line, basically.
And my question to you is, I don't know if you've noticed that everybody is focusing on Hunter Biden's business shenanigans, but or dealings, I should say. And nobody's really mentioning the fact that he was talking about CrowdStrike having servers in the Ukraine. Did that strike you at all?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the whole point of it, isn't it? If you can get that CrowdStrike server, and if it has the network log on it, then you can prove who did what to whom, when, and where, you know? So
yeah.
that would trace every activity on the DNC network or the Hillary Clinton network or anything that they're looking at, whatever's on that server. So that would be able to allow them to trace every transaction involved on that network.
Had you heard anything about the servers being in the Ukraine?
No, but I mean, this is really a one world network. So you can, have cloud storage anywhere you want. So and it can be in any continent in the world. So it wouldn't surprise me that they could have a backup server in the Ukraine or somewhere else. So I mean, it's not impossible. I mean, certainly. Most, for example, I think Google has something like 8 separate data storage areas, you know, like 8 separate physical locations. And when you do a Google query, it's a distributed query to all 8, and then they consolidate it and feed it back to you.
Mr. Binney, I want to ask you, this latest, let's call it rumor blower gate, how does it compare in your mind to Russia Gate, in quotes, like where have we gone? It seems more psychedelic to me, more desperate, more impossible, even if one can imagine something being more difficult to wrap your head around than what the press did with Russia Gate. This strikes me as even stranger. How does it strike you?
Well, it just Russia Gate. I think I was fairly clear from the beginning in 2016. That it was a fabrication, a fake, and this certainly appears to be of the same ilk, you know, the same character. I mean, it's just unsubstantiated.
But the timing that they would launch this now.
Manufactured. So, and it's always, Gusra too was a manufactured person, and the idea, the thought that the DNC was hacked by the Russians, that was also manufactured, and you know, it was just a fake from the beginning, and the people who did it knew that.
So we're still getting cannonballed by the media with all these manufactured crises. Why do they still think they are going to have the effect that they intend, do you think?
Well, their intent, I think, is to keep saying these things over and over again so that people, when
exactly.
It comes time to voting next year, that people will be influenced by that repetition. You know,
yeah.
They'll think, this must be right, so I have to vote for a Democrat. Because they're, you know, the Republicans are obviously corrupt. So as long as they keep saying those things over and over again, I think that's the principal effort that they're trying to do, just to bamboozle everybody and you know, just to confuse them and make them to try to manipulate them to doing to voting for them. That's all.
It just seems strange to me that in the wake of the debacle of Russiagate that this would happen. It just
they're just moving right along, just throwing spaghetti up against the wall is what it feels like. Oh, okay, that didn't work. Let's try this. So Bill, I wanted you to know that while I was writing your intro, I went to Wikipedia, and you know. They're dissing you on Wikipedia. You know, it says here, in 2016...
Why would that surprise you, Christina?
Well, it's not surprising me. I just want to tell Bill and get his reaction to it. In 2016, Binney said the U.S. intelligence community's assessment that Russia interfered in the 2016 presidential election was false. But on close examination of the documents that purported to prove a British origin of the hacking could not prove... The data was downloaded from the Democratic National Committee. What do you have to say to that, Bill?
What I said was that, because when we could prove that Gusra 2 was a fabricator,
right?
right? He was fabricating everything. So this guy's manufacturing everything. So that means that everything he said, we had to be able to prove. Now, he said he downloaded it from the DNC network, but when you looked at the stuff and tried to prove that, you could not prove it. But you could say for sure that it was a local download, wherever local is.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the only thing that changed.
So, but
everything else is true. I mean, it was not a hack. It couldn't have been a hack. We could prove that by trying it and test and verify that we could not get the speeds that were necessary to transfer it. But those speeds that were downloaded by Goosefer 2 were, in fact, compatible with a thumb drive or a CD-ROM. So,
well, what does that mean then? I mean, who's Goosefer 2 then? If that was.
My guess? You want my guess?
Yes.
My guess is it's Brennan's group down there in CIA doing cyber stuff. And it's coming out of them. And they also, my guess also is that they used that program that they had that was exposed in Vault 7. You know,
What's it called?
Marble Framework, yeah. That would make it look like the Russians did it.
And could you explain Marble Framework to our listeners, please?
Well, it's a set of code that allows them to be able to hack into a target, if you will, wherever that target is. And when they're doing it, it makes it, they'll leave little trace signs or trace indications that it's someone else doing it. So and in the case of Marble Framework, I think they had five countries they could emulate. One was Russia, one was China, the other was Iran, and then North Korea, and also, I think, Arab countries.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So let me ask you something. Because I think it's very, very important to address this. I mean, I wish I could have your detractors in front of you so that you could have a dialogue, because I know what it's like to be a whistleblower and to present information and have people, you know, people just say anything to try and discredit you based on nothing, or even worse, based on lies. So I want to talk about who do you think are your biggest detractors, the biggest detractors of your VIPS report, and what do they say, and what is your response to what they say?
Well, I mean, most of the detractors would say that it can be transferred at the rates that were given by Goosefer 2. But we challenged that and said, okay, why don't you come out and show us the path you think you can get it across at that rate. And if you need help, we'll even help you try to do it. And so far, we've had no takers at all.
And who actually said that? You know,
Some of them were people inside the VIPS group. But some of them also were outside, so it was a mix.
Do you have any names? Because I'm really interested in pressing these people, you know, because I'm not gonna lie, Celia and I are, you know, big fans of yours, and I believe in your techno genius, and I do believe that people who have looked at your report, which is, you know, I'm kind of a techno peasant, but your report is pretty clear, and you guys were obviously very careful, and I just, you know, I think these people should, you know, should provide the same level of transparency and reporting that you did.
Well, can I put it this way for you? I think all of them have just slowly drifted off and away, and they're not saying anything like that anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think they've acquiesced to the truth.
Well, I know, but the reason why I'm asking you this is because I've just recently I'm having a dialogue with an editor who's asked me to write something, and when I explained, and who buys, apparently this person, I didn't know this before I was considering the gig, this person buys the official narrative. So I wrote a long memo, and in it, of course, I mentioned you and the VIP cyber team, and oh well, many people have discredited that. So I was like, well, who are these many, and what have they said, and what proof have they provided? So that's why I'm asking you these questions, because I want those two things to be put together. I want what those people say put together with your rebuttal.
You want them challenged.
I want them publicly challenged, because I think the. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm trying to get at, Bill. I mean.
Well, I was just trying to say that these people are really good people. They're not. They're just. They were just misled or thinking in the wrong direction. That's all. Patrick Lawrence. He was a case who wrote the articles and in the Nation, and for that they got rid of him.
Oh wow!
That was kind of a disgrace for them. But that came about, and because they had a rebuttal in there. All the names are there in that article, or in the Patrick Lawrence articles.
Is that your phone ringing?
Sorry?
No, I thought I heard a phone ringing in the background.
Yeah, you did. I just shut it off, so I'm not going to take any calls here.
So let's talk about the latest regarding Russiagate. You had some comments to make about Ty Clevenger being the lawyer for Ed Batowski.
We had Ty Clevenger on the show a few weeks ago.
And he FOIA'd.
Brave man.
He's defending Ed Batowski against defamation and being discredited and losing a lot of his business because of what he said about Assange saying that Seth Rich had given him the information off of the DNC servers, the emails, and Clevenger is now suing people, and he also FOIA'd the NSA for any information that they had about Assange and Seth Rich, etc. And his response, you have spoken about the response that he received. Could you talk about that, please?
Yeah, the response I think he got from NSA in writing was they had 32 pages, 15 different items on the on record of Seth Rich communicating with other people, like they don't specifically say which ones, but the list that Ty had FOIA'd was included. Julian Assange, Kim.com, I guess a number of other people in WikiLeaks and some other folks, and they didn't distinguish that. Now the word I've heard through the grapevine is that NSA only exposed a fragment of what they had on that.
Oh.
So that they have a lot more information there than they're exposing. And I would say that that's probably typical of them. They don't want to tell, the agency, NSA, says basically stands for never say anything. So that means, they're not going to tell you the truth, and that's basically what you can. I mean, you witnessed it with Clapper and and Alexander and Hayden and all of that. They're not telling you the truth.
So, what information would they have?
They would have all the emails, all the phone calls, recordings, transcripts, and so on, of any contacts that he had with anybody on that list.
You know, this is so interesting because we're looking at this current. Whatever Biden gate, CrowdStrike gate, whatever, and we're looking at Russia gate, and everything could be made clear
instantly
if the NSA just gave all this stuff to Congress, right?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up there. I lost you.
I said, it's very interesting how all these different gates, this current, whatever you want to call it, Biden / CrowdStrike gate, and the Russia gate, all of this could be made completely clear if the NSA handed over what it had to Congress, right?
Well, NSA has. First, to give you a little better understanding of what NSA really has here, if you look at the Fairview program, NSA Space Fairview, you Google that, you'll get all the tapping points for AT&T on the fiber networks inside the United States, and there's close to somewhere between 80 and 100 of them.
Right.
And they what they do is they from that they tap the fibers for NSA and help them acquire content and metadata of all U.S. communications across the board. That's also true for another program called Stormbrew, which is Verizon. They're doing the same, and they've got a number of tapping points. And then there's another one, Blarney, that they had that includes another 28 telecommunications companies that are also feeding NSA. So the point is that the vast majority of everything that's being sent in the United States on the fire, in terms of emails or phone calls or any type of transactions like bank transactions, you know, credit cards, things of that nature, all that's being captured by NSA in all of its internal data on U.S. citizens and all in violation of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So that tells you the extent of what they have.
It
actually goes worldwide. It's not just in the United States. It's worldwide.
So you know what's interesting? It's almost like if I were to have a congressional hearing on some kind of high-level malfeasance or internet, any kind of malfeasance, I think the NSA is the place to go for evidence, forensic evidence, right?
I you're kind of breaking up there. It's a bad connection here.
Oh, no. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
I said, you know, if I wanted to do an investigative hearing for the Senate or the House on anything having to do with major malfeasance of any kind, it sounds to me like the NSA is the place to go for forensic evidence.
Yeah, and they are providing a database for FBI and DEA to do criminal arrests inside the United States. That's a direct violation of the First, Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments of the Constitution, as well as any number of laws, the Penn Register Law, Electronic Privacy Act, Electronic Security Act, those kinds of acts that were passed. So, yeah, the only way to do it is to clean up NSA and get rid of the data, purge the data that they have that's not relevant, that they don't have a warrant for, and then we will be something that will be closer to managing information inside the United States that conforms with the Constitution and the laws of this country.
Yeah, but
I will point out that the House and Senate Intelligence Committee are advocates for this process.
Well, of course. I mean, you know what? Because you've said everything that you just said, could you paint the picture for us of your perception of what we've become as a nation as a result of just what you were talking about?
Well, I mean, we've become very similar to, and we haven't gone quite as far as, but becoming down the path for, you know, the old Soviet Union, the East German Stasi, and that kind of organization, the Gestapo, SS. It's the standard totalitarian process to want to know everything about your citizens so you can control them. And that's population control. That's exactly what totalitarian states do. And that's the path we are on.
So how did the totalitarian infection get into your worldview? And I've seen A Good American, the documentary about you, three times. I loved it.
Celia's a big fan.
I highly recommend to everybody. If you haven't seen it, please see it. So, how do you your worldview was the Cold War worldview, namely our enemy is the Soviet Union primarily. That's the Cold War, and we have to protect ourselves from that thing out there. And now we're in this totally other universe where the enemy is within. It's what we call the deep state, and we have different terms for it. But when did you realize, if you could just talk a little bit about your, I guess, awakening, that are like, who is John Brennan in terms of what does he want? How does he feel about America? Is he a straight up communist? Has there been a communist infiltration? Well, yeah, I knew you were going to react,
what?
Christina, but these are my questions to Mr. Binney.
Okay.
I believe we were infiltrated by communists.
I trust you,
and I want to know
somewhere.
What Mr. Binney thinks.
Okay.
There's something very wrong. inside our government.
Yeah.
Very sinister. I want to know what he thinks is the nature of it.
It all started, let me tell you how this all started. First of all, we were developing a program called Thin Thread Inside NSA that would be able to selectively pick relevant information out of massive flows of data. My initial goal was to go after 20 terabytes a minute of data, which would be a really good chunk of the internet worldwide.
Yeah.
So we developed that process to be able to do that. And by 1999, we had everything connected basically in the front end, the back end, and then we were implementing at three different sites and made that working and functioning in by 2000. Then proposed to go at it for all of the sites that would produce terrorist-related data in January of 2001, but Hayden and company, they all rejected that.
Hayden being the head of CIA at the time, right?
No, he was director of NSA.
Yeah, director of NSA, I'm sorry.
And then Hayden. So he and George Tenet and Dick Cheney and Bush got together and decided that that's one of the things they wanted to do, not to use it the way we had it, but to take what we had done and apply it to everything starting in the U.S. and take in all data on everybody. And that's what they started doing in October of 2001. Which was illegal. Yeah, well, let me explain a little more here. In the Thin Thread program, we had a filter up front that only went for targets of interest and anything in zones of suspicion around them. So, in other words, we had to have probable cause. So, we were using the human behavior to be the selector and basis for probable cause. And we reduced the intake to a minuscule amount. Because that's all the needles that were in the haystack, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
So that was the first thing they wanted to get rid of, because since we could see everything, that meant that we could capture everything. So in order to get everything, which is what they wanted, Cheney especially, they removed that particular filter, and so everything came in. And then behind that, we had another protection, identity protection. We would encrypt the attributes of people who weren't known to be involved in target activity, and so that meant their identity was protected, even from NSA analysts. They couldn't do things like love intelligence against their lovers.
Right.
They were cheating on them. That's what they did.
Love intelligence.
With the stuff. With the bulk acquisition, you could do it because there was no protection. They removed all that encryption, so all the identities were out in the open. And so that meant... And then the final one they removed was our auditing program. That was an auditing program that looked at everybody that came into the network, where they went, what they did, how long they stayed, and so on, everything that they did.
Wow.
So that meant, the first thing they removed was get rid of the filter so that everything would come in. The second was get rid of the protections of identities, the encryption, so that everybody would be known on everything that was taken in. And the third one was get rid of the auditing program so no one would know what they did with that data.
Like a striptease they did here.
And then when Obama came in, he doubled down on that. So
he doubled down on it in what sense?
I'm sorry?
He doubled down on that in what sense?
He basically kept doubled down the budget, increased he had to build the Bluffdale facility to handle all of the increased acquisition of data that they were getting worldwide. And then one of the biggest mistakes that the managers of these intelligence communities make is they say all of this collection is intelligence. No, it's not intelligence. It's not intelligence until you understand what it means. So in other words, they're collecting basic data, information, period, to try to assess, they're misplacing what intelligence is and what represents intelligence.
But, you know, when we look at former, and I've done a fair amount of both traveling there back in the day, looking at, I grew up in a socialist country, which I would call soft totalitarian, namely Sweden. So I've spent much of my life thinking about former communist states, especially East Germany is always of great interest. There's a book by a woman named Anna Funder called Stasi Land. It's six stories from behind the Berlin Wall. So their mentality was very clear that anybody who is an enemy of the communist GDR state must be found out and their life must be destroyed. So they can never work again, their kids can't go to university, they're never going to write a play again, etc. Why did our guys start to do this against the American people?
I think we need to address this. I have a lawsuit for the country, calling out the government for violations of the Constitution against constitutional rights of every U.S. citizen for all this mass collection at NSA. And it's in the Third Circuit right now. They just had oral arguments on the 25th of this month, and we're going to see how that goes. If the Third Circuit doesn't come up and make the right decision to stop this stuff, then we're going to take it to the Supreme Court.
Why do they want all this information on us all? I mean, I know that's a naive question, but I have to ask it. Are they trying to root out? They want to know everything about everybody's politics so they can stop people and ferret out whistleblowers. What's the main driving force? Because this is a massive force in our, this is the defining feature of the United States right now is surveillance.
Yeah, and see, the only way you really get the truth out of the intelligence community is to have a true whistleblower, not a rumor blower now.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Whistleblower. So you have somebody who has a firsthand knowledge of what the problem is, not somebody who is running around outside this circle of knowledge trying to assemble information and creating a fabrication.
Who's behind this machine, Bill? Who's doing this? Who's in charge of this big machine?
Who's in charge of the collection?
Well, of the whole institutional surveillance, the whole surveillance state institution.
Well, it's divided. I think there's divided responsibilities. NSA has the bulk of it, but CIA also runs their own programs, and they ran some programs, I think, that were collecting on the Trump campaign and so on outside of the normal government channels. In other words, they set up their own acquisition system, and they did it because they didn't want to use the NSA database on collecting, because they've got all the data on the Trump campaign too. So instead of using the NSA data, because if they did that, you see, every time they go into the NSA data to query it, it leaves a record in the network logs and so on. Or if they go in and ask for a unmasking of a name, that's a record that's recorded. So there's a record of them doing that kind of thing. But if you set up your own separate collection activity, like against the president and his campaign, which is what they did, then that is outside that normal channel, and there's no record of it. Nobody in Congress could see it or know about it, you know, and nobody in NSA would know about it, but CIA people would. And that was run by, I believe, Clapper and Brennan.
So, I mean, this
Clapper,
is crazy.
We always come back, Brennan, Clapper and Brennan, Clapper and Brennan. And that's why, you know, what I'm always getting at is who are they? Who are they ideologically? Who are they almost like spiritually? Who are they? What are they? Why are they so malevolent? And what do they want? What are they after? These are huge questions. But there's a huge divide in the United States right now, and between those who feel that our big problem is Donald Trump and those who feel that our big problem is the coup by our deep state against Donald Trump. And I belong firmly in the latter camp, and I think we're just in an extremely shocking, dangerous time, and we don't understand why this is happening or how this whole apparatus was built while we were. And you understand more about it, Mr. Binney, than just about anybody. And again, I'm wondering if you feel, was there a moment when you realized that we had a deep state that was operating against the United States of America, and even a sitting president? Did that shock you, or did you see it incrementally?
No, I pretty much call this an effort by the secret government, the shadow government, the military intelligence industrial congressional cabal.
Yeah.
Basically feel that they know what we need to do as a country rather than the people.
Right.
And to me, to my mind, they are basically committing sedition and treason against the founding principles of this nation.
Precisely.
Well, are you in your suit, which I would love to get a copy of that. Do you name specific individuals as being perpetrators of this?
No, we name organizations because people change. You know, the lawsuit and originally started by naming President Obama, since he was the head of the entire government.
Right.
That's how you do it. And then when President Trump got elected, we had to change the name to President Trump. So
But
it goes back to Bush and Cheney. They started it, and Obama doubled down, and Trump was hit with some of the stuff that that they were collecting. They used that against him. So, you know, this has to, in my mind, this is basically a total violation of the founding principles of this nation.
And on that point, I tweeted out that you were going to be on the show with us this morning, and somebody just asked me to ask you, I think this is a good question, please ask him if he is in any capacity currently working in the Trump administration.
Could you repeat that question?
The question is, are you in any capacity currently working in the Trump administration?
I don't think so.
I don't see anybody in Congress going against this. Is that what you're asking?
Oh, sorry.
Are you working for the Trump?
No,
are you working for the Trump administration?
Somebody wanted us to ask you if you have any.
If I can relocate and get a better signal.
Yeah. Okay. That's strange.
Why would they?
Well, because that's an excellent question. Even though we know,
why would they ask that question? I find it. Very
why wouldn't Bill Binney be working with the? To help Donald Trump with what he's up against. If he's not, why not?
Well,
Why wouldn't the Trump administration think
Bill Binney is working for the American people within the capacity that he, you know, as a member of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity.
No, I understand
doing his
that.
Independent investigation. I think that he works to get the truth out and let the justice system decide who's right and who's wrong. You know, why would he work for the Trump administration?
Why would he work for the it's not about, I'm not, the question is.
Bill, are you there?
I think I can hear you better here,
okay.
Just a little bit better.
The question was, do you.
Somebody online wanted me to ask you if you're presently working with the Trump administration, with or for the Trump administration.
Well, I thought that. With the Trump administration coming in, that he was, I still think that, he's still the best chance we have to fixing this. Because he's an outsider, he doesn't owe anybody anything, he's not connected or, you know, bound to anything that the permanently in place petrified politicians we have in Washington.
Right.
Right. He's not bound by any of that. So he is the best chance we have of fixing it. Also, I think Attorney General Barr may also be helpful in this way. I'm waiting to see if he's really going to fix the DOJ, because until he does, I call it the Department of Just Us.
Can you understand what our position is vis-a-vis Julian Assange? Or you can say, I don't want to address that, but I'd be very curious why.
If you simply take a step back and look at it, and where in the world do you get truth? And certainly Julian Assange and WikiLeaks has. I mean, they stand out very, very clearly as one of the most reliable sources of truth.
Right.
I mean, for the last 10 years, I mean, I don't know that they've ever published anything that's wrong.
So why would he be extradited here to face criminal prososecution? And you've pointed out that the collateral murder footage is constitutes a war crime, and so it was not a criminal act to publish it. Is that right?
Well, I think it's because they want to charge him under the Espionage Act of 1917, which carries with it a potential death penalty.
Well, who's they in this instance?
Most of it's the intelligence agencies, because they were exposed for the crimes they were committing.
Exactly, right.
And also, any number of governments around the world have been exposed for all those crimes, too, because it wasn't just in the U.S. I mean, they've exposed crimes around the world.
But Julian Assange exposed the underbelly of our whole rotten system, so it seems to me we should help him out.
What that does is create a lot of enemies for him, so they want to get rid of him, period. That's the whole point.
Getting back to your lawsuit and getting back to all the crimes that are being committed every day by the NSA through its collection system, Bill, don't you think it's like trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube? I mean, once you have this capacity, once you've employed it and you've gained the power and the information and so on that you have, just like the CIA, that they have their own black budgets, they gather their own information a la NSA. I mean, how do you put isn't it like putting the toothpaste back in the tube, or how do you address it?
My effort is to try to ensure that they don't collect the data in the first place. So that's what the lawsuits and some of the things that we have put forward, also the solution in the Third Circuit as to how to fix it and how to do it right and be conforming with the Constitution and the laws of the country. So I'm trying to force the argument down that way,
Oh, okay.
What was your reaction when Ed Snowden came forward?
He was talking about half the programs that he was talking about I invented, so I was not, see, I didn't take anything out of the, when I left NSA, because everybody in Congress knew that I did all those things, so I didn't think I needed any proof of what I did. So I didn't have anything like that. But Snowden took it out because he needed that documentation to validate what he was saying. So, and when he did that, of course, it made it public, and so it was in the public domain, so now I felt I could talk about it openly,
simply
because it's... it's in the public domain, and the First Amendment right gives you the right to talk about anything in the public domain. So
he's been treated so differently from Julian Assange. There was an Academy Award-winning documentary about him. He's largely hailed as a hero in the media, whereas Assange is just absolutely tarred and feathered and vilified. And I don't really understand that schism.
It's like dark horse, light horse with those two. Why is that?
One is loved, one is despised. Uh-oh. Can you hear Bill? I can't.
No. Hello? Okay. We just lost him. It's funny we're talking to a techno genius and we're having all these technical problems while we on our show with him, but it's so incredibly troubling what he's saying, and I
can't bear this. Are we going to get him back?
Yeah, I hope so.
Jesse's nodding. Okay.
And
I really wanted to hear what he had to say there about the Assange.
I'm amazed. I had not heard about this lawsuit that he has put forward, and I just think it's amazing that he's doing that. And I just wonder how courageous the justice system is going to be about this.
Well, let's go back and talk about, when Snowden was telling us what he was telling us when he first came out, he was saying they collect all this so that they have everything on everybody for future. It's like a
reference.
Bank.
Yes.
It's
yes.
like a big bank.
Yes.
Where you store, you put it in the bank, and you might you save it for future, you know, when you might need it in the future, so that when you need to destroy somebody, you just pull all their stuff right out, and you'll find something, even if it's a parking ticket, right? You'll find something, which is a terrifying.
Hello?
Oh, thank goodness you're back.
Bill, are you back?
Yes, I think so.
You know, I was just telling Celia, here we are talking to a techno genius and having all kinds of technical problems on the show. It's a little embarrassing. Forgive us, please.
So let's go back to you were about to answer my question. Why such different treatment of Assange and Snowden by the mass media machine?
Yeah, I think when we were talking about it, the point I was trying to make was they're really going after any kind of news media worldwide, and you know they've done that here in the United States too, going after Jim Risen, Jim Rosen, the Associated Press, just threatening people with grand juries and indictments and so on. So I mean they've done that here, and they're doing it with Julian Assange. And it's basically to silence any mechanism that would convey the truth to the people of the world.
So the difference being that Ed Snowden, he's not a publisher, he's not a journalist, he's a whistleblower. So his domain is kind of contained, whereas, you know, to the information that he has, whereas Julian is a publisher of, you know, information that comes from many, many different quarters.
Yeah, and, you know, I think also one of the reasons, I mean, there's any number of reasons, but one of the things, they certainly don't want Julian Assange talking about anything about the 2016 releases of the data that he had on the DNC or anything like that. So they didn't want him talking about that either, because that would destroy the narrative that they've been trying to push.
Really, it all comes back to the media again.
Talk to us about your efforts to get your report out on the DNC, the DNC download, as you put it.
I'm really you're breaking up there.
Okay,
am I breaking up on your end?
No, we hear you just fine.
I wanted you to talk about your efforts to reach the mainstream press with your forensic study of the DNC download.
The DNC download, that was clearly a provable download to a thumb driver, CD-ROM. And the reason is pretty straightforward. And this was all, this I basically brought up with Director Pompeo when he was at CIA, and also we've written several VIPS articles about it. It's like all of the 35,816 emails that were published from the DNC, that is from 23 May and a 25 May and a 26 August downloads. All of them were downloaded to a storage device, and it's provable because it carries with it the properties of FAT file formats. Now, file allocation table FAT is simply something that process that reads data to a storage facility or storage device. And when it does that, it rounds off the last modified time to the nearest even second. So all 35,816 emails from the DNC posted by WikiLeaks have that property.
Oh, incredible.
So that says all of them were downloaded to a storage device.
So
that's provable that it wasn't a hack directly.
So, but what happened when you tried, did you try and get this information out to the press, to people in Congress, to people at the Department of Justice, to Mueller?
Robert Mueller.
to Mueller especially. What happened? Did you try and reach out to these people? And if you did, what happened?
I brought all that up with them, and then he asked the request I had from Director Pompeo at the time was I willing to talk to NSA and CIA, or NSA and FBI? And I said, sure, I'd be willing to do that, but I would never assist them in violating the constitutional rights of U.S. citizens, which they're doing, you know?
Right. Right.
So, but I've never heard anything back since.
Oh. Well, are you too straight and arrow for them, or what? What do you think they're?
You've never been questioned by Robert Mueller. Let's just put a really fine point on that. He's never Robert Mueller has never directly asked you any questions on the record.
Here we go again.
This is so strange. This has never happened. Okay, can you hear me now?
I'm still not getting that.
How about that? Okay. Has Robert Mueller ever questioned you directly?
Oh, no. No, he never did.
Nobody from his team ever reached out to you?
No, nobody from the House or Senate or any of the committees asked me to testify, no.
That is so amazing.
No, well, they didn't want to know the truth.
Well, how much money did this cost the American taxpayer? Do we know, roughly?
What?
The Mueller investigation.
The Mueller investigation?
It's just,
staggering.
You see, they didn't want to hear things that basically would lead inside the shadow government, which many are a part of. So it would start to attack the foundation of what their whole shadow government was all about, was to control everything. So
how do you penetrate that?
How do you penetrate it?
Through the courts or what?
Well, I try to do it in the court of law. That's where I try to do it. That's the third part of government that is supposed to have oversight of some of the... Certainly they are supposed to be defending the Constitution. They all are supposed to be defending the Constitution, but they're not. Certainly not those, a good deal of them in the Article 2, the administration, and Article 1 in the Congress. They're so culpable now that they feel that they have to defend one another. If they don't, they all fall, you know?
Yep. Well, do you worry about the justice system letting you down?
I think of this. You mean, do I worry about it? No, I don't. I'm going to continue doing what I do, no matter how long it takes or what I have to do. So, these people need to be. The light needs to be shined on these people in courts of law and in the public domain. And damn the torpedoes.
Damn the torpedoes. God bless you.
I mean, I think that this is more of a RICO case. You know, each president in succession has moved that same ball forward to where we are now. You know, I mean, I think past presidents need to be held accountable as well, don't you?
Yeah, especially a certain past president.
Past members of in the intelligence community, all those people. Don't you think that they should all be held accountable?
Well, of course he does.
Well, yeah, I think there are people that are there that I think are still good people. It's just a matter of getting them to doing the right thing. For example, when President Trump gave the authority to Attorney General Barr to declassify things. You know, he's having people help him determine what should be declassified. And I have a really simple suggestion. Executive Order 13526, which is the executive order that covers classification for the entire United States government, Section 1.7 says, and this is the important one, for these people looking at declassification. You cannot classify, maintain classified, or not declassify any evidence of a crime, corruption, fraud, abuse, whatever. You know?
Yep.
So that should be the guide at shutting at declassification.
See, I think this, Christina, speaks to you were wondering why would anybody wonder if Mr. Binney was worried. I don't mean for the Trump administration, but there's a gap here. If only he could be talking to them on a daily basis, maybe we could get up and out of this hideous, flaming morass that we're trapped in, the whole American people, all the time. But people think it's about Trump versus, you know, whatever. It's the, America is sinking here. This is a real catastrophe, and the catastrophe is that the media is the extended arm of the deep state.
Well, and Congress isn't doing anything. Justice isn't doing anything. FBI is, doing its rogue thing.
But the media is doing their rogue thing. Its marching orders from the deep state directly. So, I mean, how we are no longer, we're a democracy in some ways. We're allowed to come and go, you know, but I don't think we're a free country anymore.
Oh, I agree with that.
And you feel it. You just feel it all the time that anybody who tells the truth, their life is going to be turned upside down.
Bill, do you worry about your security? I mean, do you?
I'm sorry, I couldn't. I couldn't make that one out either because it's really a bad connection here.
Do you worry about your security?
Do we what?
No. Do you worry?
What steps do you take to feel secure in the work that
your
you're doing?
Your personal security, do you worry about it?
Well, no. Basically, I'm doing it for them and for everybody else in the country, so...
So
I can't worry about anything. If I did, I would never do anything, and right. I can't. That's not acceptable.
Well, that's the definition of a patriot.
I agree. I can't wait to get news of the progress of your lawsuit in the courts.
You're such a blessing to this nation, and how you've been treated is shocking and heartbreaking. But at the same time, everybody who knows anything...
Reflect back on this current rumor blower. You can't classify him as a whistleblower. He's not a genuine whistleblower.
I know.
And it basically discredits and diminishes the value of whistleblowers.
Well, I mean, I think that's all part and parcel of this entire episode, you know? I mean... A second-hand source is now a big whistleblower. I mean, it's crazy, but we know that we've got a rock star whistleblower on our show today, that's for sure, and we encourage you to soldier on and really admire the work that you've been doing, Bill.
Thank you so much for giving us this time today. We're so grateful for everything you're doing. Please let us know. What we can do to support you, to help you.
Yes. Yes. And do come back anytime you
sure.
want to.
I'd be glad to. Yeah.
Tell us what's going on.
We'll get our microphones fixed, okay? Whatever it is.
Okay.
See,
right.
I think it might be a supernatural thing.
Oh, I hope not. I sincerely don't. But again, we'll say goodbye here for now, but only temporarily.
To be continued.